Hello, this is Ian Berg with the commercial news, dated Wednesday, February 26th, 2020. We'll start today's reading on the front page of the paper with the article City to Burn Vacant Structures by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. Saving the city about $7,000 to $10,000 per dilapidated structure on the city's demolition list. Residents will see more structures burned down. The City Council's Public Services Committee Tuesday night heard about fire department training opportunities coming up. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said it's free training for the firefighters, and city departments, fire and public works, are working together on it. Interim Danville Fire Chief Don McMasters said burning the structures can take about 90 days for Environmental Protection Agency paperwork approval. McMasters said they have five potential structures lined up to be burned down, instead of demolished, around June or July. He estimates about $2,000 worth of expenses to the fire department. McMaster also talked about a terrorism exercise in April, with Champaign and Urbana firefighters coming here for the Mutual Aid Box Alarm System training. A vacant structure will be used for a house collapse, rescue, and other training. It's going to be a busy spring and summer, he said, of all the training. Ward 6 Alderman James Poschard asked about the vacant, former Pizza Hut building on North Vermilion Street. City officials said the eyesore remains tied up in legal cases. In other business, there were no public comments at a public hearing for the city's 2020 to 2024 Community Development Block Grant Consolidated Plan. Danville Grants and Planning Manager Logan Kronk went over key points over the five-year plan. The overall plan is an application for U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development funds to be disbursed during those 5 years within low to moderate income areas. Each of the following years, the city will submit an action plan in accordance to the multi-year plan. The data for the plan was collected from the Census, American Community Survey, and from multiple special service agencies within Danville. The allocation of funds was based on this data. Draft planned allocations over the five-year period include the following: public infrastructure improvements at $1,156,610, home re rehabilitations at $1,250,000, removal of blight and dangerous structures at $1,250,000, and support of non-homeless and special needs at $150,000. Support of homeless needs at $75,000. Support of public services at $100,000. Administrative costs at $875,000. In the 2020 action plan, there is public infrastructure improvements at $151,322, home rehabilitations at $250,000, removal of blight and dangerous structures, about 25 structures for a total of $250,000, support of non-homeless and special needs via accessibility grants at $30,000, support for homeless needs via shelters at $15,000, support of public services via nonprofit special needs at $100,000, and administrative costs at $175,000. Aldermen are expected to act on the plan next month. The committee also recommended forming a wait list for video game licenses. The full city council will act on this next week. Now let's go to the article, District 118 to Consider Computer Update, by Carol Rome, Danville. Danville District 118 School Board members Wednesday will consider whether to enter into three lease agreements worth a total of more than $900,000, which would replace old computer equipment district-wide. The lease agreements are part of a cyclical plan approved by the board in 2013 to replace aging desktop and laptop computers to ensure the district's students and staff are using reliable technology. Three leases, totaling $951,111, including interest, will replace the district's old equipment with new computers. The first lease, for $252,261, would replace 261 of the district's 1,435 desktop computers. The second lease, for $469,043, would replace 376 of the district's 1,284 laptop computers. The third lease, for $229,806, would replace 845 of the district's 3,099 Chromebooks. Of the $951,111 total, $887,672 will be covered by Title I funds to pay for teacher and student computers. The remaining $63,439 will be covered by local funds to pay for devices not directly involved in instruction. Also on Wednesday, board members will consider approving updates to the Board of Education policy. The policy updates encompass prohibiting the recording of conversations on district property or at district-sponsored activities, providing equal employment opportunities and recruitment of minorities, prohibiting workplace sexual harassment, setting protocol for visitors on school property and visitor conduct, implementing staff development programs, setting eligibility for home and hospital instruction, setting graduation requirements, prohibiting the harassment of students, developing procedures for agency and police interviews of students administrating medical cannabis, reporting abused and neglected children, and setting curriculum content, including offering one unit of cursive instruction before fifth grade. The policy updates also affect the areas of school finance, facility management, and buildings, human resources, and school board, including vacancies, conflicts of interests, ethics, and gifts, also terms and duties. If you want to go, the Danville District 118 school board members will meet at 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday in the Dr. David Fields Administrative Service Center at 110 East William Street. Next, we'll go to the article, Tasty and Toasty, Oakwood Students Get Cheesy with Food Project, by Carol Rome. Oakwood. As Oakwood Junior High School 7th graders Peyton Reed and Tessa Segovia took turns flipping sandwiches on a hot griddle earlier this week, an age-old debate heated up. Are those sandwiches called grilled cheese or cheese toasties? 8th grader Jada Aerosmith offered the perfect compromise. I call them really delicious cheesy sandwich melts. After school on Monday, 21 Oakwood Junior High students who are enrolled in Project Success discovered a buffet of sandwich fixings to create their own cheesy sandwich melt. The youngsters could choose from a variety of breads and cheeses, including healthier options such as whole grain bread and low-fat cheese. They have different types of protein they can choose from: salami, ham, bacon, and turkey. We also have tomatoes and sliced apples to make it adventurous, Project Success site coordinator Joanna Pickering said. Most youngsters opted for meat-enhanced cheesy sandwich melts and ate the apple slices on the side. Peyton's sandwich was a combination of melted cheese, bacon, and turkey, whereas Tessa's sandwich included bacon and salami. Mine looks gorgeous, Peyton said, as she admired her sandwich browning on the griddle. Oakwood Junior High's Project Success group experiments with food and meal planning a couple times a month during its cooking club activities. Cooking club is fun because we get to be creative, 8th grader Amelia Frerich said. Madison Brazelton agreed. You get to be hands-on, and it's interactive. We've done pancakes, homemade pizzas, egg dishes, anything easy that we can make at home, Pickering said. They will be learning how to jazz up ramen, which will help their families stretch their money further, she said. Pickering said the Oakwood Junior High's Project Success Group averages about 25 seventh and eighth graders per after-school session. Luann Grimm, Oakwood Junior High's librarian, is a program assistant. This is only the second year Oakwood has had Project Success, Pickering said. We do cooking club, art club, DIY club, and STEM club. During the first hour after school, youngsters work on homework and can receive assistance with it if needed. I actually finished my homework, Jada said of being in Project Success. We get homework help, and it makes me have better grades, Amelia added. Madison listed off some of the projects the group has been involved in, such as making bath bombs and miniature birdhouses and creating a haunted house for little kids in Oakwood Park at Halloween. She also said she enjoyed going on a field trip to a pumpkin patch. In the spring, the Project Success Group beautifies the property around the school with plantings. Every other Wednesday, the youngsters have the opportunity to take on more of a leadership role. Every other Wednesday, we have student-led lessons that build a leadership and mentoring skills, Pickering said. If there is something they're interested in, they can share it with others. Some of the activities that have been shared include aerobics and card games. If you're in eighth grade, they let you teach how to make slime, Amelia said. You can teach anything, even like TikTok dances, seventh grader Josie Nunes said. I learned how to do sign language. The student-led lessons on Wednesdays have been successful in drawing some youngsters out of their shell, Pickering said. With the quieter ones, it's their time to shine, she said. Now we'll go to the death notices. James Jim Edward Long, 89, of Tilton, Illinois, passed away on Sunday, February 23rd. A celebration of life will be at 1 p.m. on Saturday, February 29th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Burial will be at Sunset Memorial Park, with full military rites accorded by American Legion Post 210. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday, February 28th, at the funeral home. Memorials may be made in Jim's memory to the charity of the donor's choice. T. Maxine McElhenney passed away on February 23rd. A celebration of life will be at 2 p.m. on Friday, February 28th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Visitation will be from noon to 2 p.m. on Friday, February 28th, at the funeral home. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be made to Second Church of Christ REACH program. Clement Kalin, 94, of Newark, Ohio, passed away on February 23rd. Calling hours will be 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, February 29th, at Brucker Kishler Funeral Home in Newark, Ohio. Military service will be at 4 p.m. Eastern. Susan Ann Killian, 79, of Danville, passed away on February 23rd. A celebration of Susie's life will be at 11 a.m. on Monday, March 2nd, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Visitation from 9 to 11 a.m. prior to the service at the funeral home. Casual attire is encouraged. She will be laid to rest at Gordon Cemetery. Cheryl L. Lawrence, 65, of Danville, passed away on February 22nd. Per Cheryl's wishes, she will be cremated and a memorial service will be held at a later date. Raymond Myers, 82, of Chrisman, passed away on Saturday, February 22nd. A celebration of Raymond's life will be at 1 p.m. on Thursday, February 22nd, at Chrisman Church of the Nazarene in Chrisman, Illinois. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Thursday, prior to the service at the church. He will be laid to rest in Woodland Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be given in his name to Chrisman Church of Nazarene. Wilma Cronkite Thomas died on February 21, 2020. She recently celebrated her 100th birthday. Services will be on Friday, February 28th, at First Presbyterian Church in Danville, Illinois. Visitation will be at 10:30 a.m., an hour before services begin at 11:30 a.m. Burial will be in the Oakwood Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family has requested donations be made to the American Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, or First Presbyterian Church. Don James Cosette, 82, of Orange City, Florida, previously of Danville, passed away on Friday, February 21st. The family will hold a private service. Memorial donations may be made to Amanus Lutheran Church in Orange City, Florida. Sharon K. Calhoun, 70, of Danville, passed away on February 25th. Memorials may be made in Sharon's name to OSF Cancer Care Center. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Friday, February 28th at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home in Danville. Services will follow at 1 p.m. at the funeral home. She will be laid to rest in Gundy Cemetery. Paul Hardin of Alvin, at 50 years old, passed away on February 24th. A celebration of Paul's life will be at 7 p.m. on Thursday, February 27th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. prior to the service on Thursday at the funeral home. Dennis Hinton, 69, of Georgetown, passed away on Sunday, February 9th. A memorial service will be at 1 p.m. on Saturday at First Church of Christ Ministry Center at 503 North Main Street in Georgetown. George McQueen, Jr., 53, of Danville, died on Friday, February 21st, in Danville. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. on Saturday at Central Park Church of Christ in Tilton. Ralph Pee-wee Drollinger, 87, of Hoopston, died on Monday, February 24th. Arrangements are pending at Anderson Funeral Home in Hoopston. Now we'll go to the article, Police Plan St. Patrick's Day Patrols, a staff report. Danville. For many people, St. Patrick's Day is a holiday that involves more alcohol than usual. To combat any impaired driving that day, the Danville Police Department announced it will conduct special patrols on March 17, 2020. The patrols also will hopefully encourage people to wear their seatbelts, according to Police Commander Terry McCord in a press release. The release noted that St. Patrick's Day is one of the deadliest holidays of the year due to the number of drunk drivers on the road. We urge our community residents and visitors to enjoy St. Patrick's Day responsibly, McCord said in the release. We will be out in force to keep impaired drivers off the roads and help ensure that everyone makes it home safely. McCord also said that at some point during the next month, the police department will conduct roadside safety checks in the city. He also advised anyone planning to be a consumer that day should be sure to designate a sober driver beforehand. If you don't, then call a cab, use a ride-sharing service, have a sober friend or family member pick you up, or stay where you are and sleep it off. Never let a friend leave your sight if you think they're about to drive impaired, and always buckle up. It's your best defense in a crash, McCord said in the release. Impaired drivers also put pedestrians at risk. Walkers should keep an eye out for cars. Designated drivers should be alert for impaired walkers as well. The Illinois Drive Sober or Get Pulled Over and Click It or Ticket campaigns are administered by the Illinois Department of Transportation, with federal safety funds managed by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Now we'll go to the article, Salt Fork Victorious in Spelling Contest, by Carol Rome, Danville. Two Salt Fork students perfectly spelled the words given to them during their rounds at the 2020 Vermilion County Spelling Contest Finals. The top scoring four of the 10 junior high and middle school teams that participated in the February 18th sectional competitions advanced to the finals on February 20th at Danville Area Community College. Salt Fork South's spellers won first place by correctly spelling 70 of 72 words. Hoopston Area came in second place with 61 words spelled correctly. Potomac rounded out third place with 60 words spelled correctly. And Oakwood placed fourth with 56 words spelled correctly. The two Salt Fork students who spelled all words correctly were Ty Smoot and Bennett Lane. The other six teams to participate in this year's sectional competition were Armstrong Ellis, Bismarck Henning, Georgetown's Mary Miller Junior High School, Rossville Albin, Schlarman Academy, and Westville Junior High School. The contest was sponsored by the Regional Office of Education, the Commercial News, and Danville Area Community College. Now for some news in local sports, we'll head to the article, Salt Fork Rolls. Storm advance to play Broncos in semifinals, by Chad Dare, Catlin. Over the course of the high school basketball season, teams will make changes in their lineups and their style of play. In the last month of the regular season, the Salt Fork Storm found a formula to their success, and it was playing a little quicker. The Storm went 6-2 in their final eight games, winning all six games in which they scored 50 or more points, while both losses came when they were held under 50. On Tuesday night in the IHSA Class 1A Regional Quarterfinals, Salt Fork overcame a slow start and got things rolling in a 62-34 triumph over Urbana University High at Salt Fork High School in Catlin. "We got it going in the second quarter, and we just kept pushing it from there," said Salt Fork senior Clayton Jarling, who had a game-high 18 points. "We were hoping to run them out of the gym, which I think we did for the most part. Even when we didn't get things in our transition game, we were able to get the ball inside a lot against them. When we did, it was either a layup or a kickout for a good jump shot." After making just 5 of 12 shots in the first quarter, Salt Fork canned 18 of 33 in the final three quarters on its way to the victory. "We were just a little slow to the ball, a little slow reaction, and a little slow on offense," said Salt Fork coach Andrew Johnson. "You would think playing at home, you would be a little more comfortable. Once they settled into the game and got things going, we were fine." So, was it a little first game nerves for the Storm? "The biggest thing is for the kids to understand it's a game," Johnson said. "If they just do their job and do their roles, things will be fine." Jarling acknowledged that it's go time for the Storm. "We are a running team, and we just have to play our game," he said. That is a little different than the Salt Fork team that only scored 23 points in its Vermilion County tournament opener against Georgetown Ridge Farm. "We have built a lot of confidence in the last month or so," said Johnson, whose team is averaging just under 60 points per game in the month of February. "The kids are fitting into their roles, and our scoring has been up. When you get things going offensively, it always gives you more confidence." Johnson admitted that Salt Fork can't just run all of the time. "There are teams in this regional where we are going to have to recognize time and score," he said. "We have to be smart with our game." Johnson used all 12 players in Tuesday's contest, as Salt Fork will turn around and play Cerro Gordo and Bemidji, a 47-33 winner over Blue Ridge, on Tuesday, in a regional semifinal contest tonight at 7:30 p.m. "We have a few kids dealing with the flu as well," Johnson said. so it was important to get those guys as much rest as possible. I thought Jacob McGee and Colden Earls did a good job of stepping up for us. McGee finished with 9 points and a game-high 4 assists off the bench for the Storm, while Earls also had 9 points in the victory. Ian Evanson was the leading scorer for Urbana University High with 9 points, while Arev Jagroop had 5 points for the Illini. Tonight's semifinal round will be at 6 p.m., with top-seeded Decatur St. Teresa taking on Decatur Lutheran. The winners will meet at 7 p.m. on Friday for the regional championship. With the time we have left, let's head over to the community brief section to see what's going on in the area. In Danville, special film set. Vermilion County Farm Bureau and Danville Area Community College will host a free screening of the independent film Silo at 3 p.m. on March 8th in the Fisher Theater. Inspired by true events, Silo tells the story of an 18-year-old who falls victim to a grain entrapment incident. As grain turns to quicksand, family members, neighbors, and first responders must put aside their differences to rescue Cody from drowning in the crop. Though not rated, the film is appropriate for farm families and first responders. Safety displays will be set up in the lobby. Doors will open at 2 p.m. Also in Danville, crafts and mysteries. Teens can discover their crafty side with art projects at 5 p.m. Thursdays in the Danville Public Library's Teen Zone for high school age teens. Also, the murder mystery themed book club meets at 6 p.m. Thursday in the second floor conference room to discuss Dying in the Wool by Francis Brody. And in Westville, Library Plans Movie. The Luck of the Irish will be the March selection for Wednesday afternoon at the movies at the Westville Public Library. It will be shown at 2 p.m. on March 4th. Call the library at 267-3170 to reserve a seat. And now we'll go to the article, Pullman Area's Revitalization Continues, from the Associated Press, Chicago. Supporters of the revitalization of Chicago's historic Pullman neighborhood say they have the money for more restoration work, 5 years after then-President Barack Obama designated part of the area as a national monument. Longtime supporters gathered with National Park Service officials last week on the far south side to celebrate the 5-year anniversary of the monument designation, as leaders unveiled the latest renderings for a more than $56 million revitalization project. A central part of the restoration is the Pullman Clock Tower and Administrative Building, which will be converted into a visitor center. That's expected to be completed next year. The designation as a national monument was important to reflect the rich history, but President Obama is also interested in making sure that our monuments tell a story, and a story that is not ended, said former Obama advisor Valerie Jarrett via video. Really, a story that is historic, but whose best chapter lies ahead. That's all the time we have for today's reading. This has been Ian Berg with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, February 26th, 2020. As always, thanks for joining me.